unwelcome. I don't know if you heard the lecture I just got on the conference call. They're giving me all these rules. But anyway, we are here. It is September 26th. My name is Kerr Mortensen. Spent a little time together talking about some do's and don'ts in the world of persuasion, motivation, and influence, and, of course, self-mastery. You can send me a question anytime. You can ask them over the phone. You can go to the replay line. I posted one. I was on a live for a little bit last week on a delayed flight. I posted another webinar that you were able to listen to and take a look at. Hopefully that was helpful. That's at whypersuasion.com. That's also the spot to download, ask questions, and do everything else. And if I'm ever not on the call, I'm probably stuck on a plane somewhere, so usually try to post something or notify what's going on just in case that happens. Usually doesn't, but it does every once in a while. So hope everyone's doing well. Getting ready. It's interesting that summer is slowly disappearing. The leaves are changing. Let's talk about finishing up the year strong and make sure we can make this your year. Now let's talk about you as a persuader, person of influence. I want to talk about something interesting today. I've been doing some research on the illusion of resistance. Many persuaders that I see that I monitor create their own no. Now, you're like, what does that mean? They create their own no. The prospect was ready to go, and somehow they're not. And you don't think they're going to say no. Sometimes you see people shake their head no that wouldn't be interested, would you? Okay. What does that tell you about the person? You wouldn't be interested, would you? You're giving them a way out. You're creating your own resistance. They were probably ready to go. Sometimes it's because we prejudge. They wouldn't be interested. They're not the type. They don't sound like they do it. That will sabotage your ability to influence. We've all done it before. It's a great shortcut. But the moment you prejudge, it sucks the life and energy out of you, and you're going to lose them anyway. Now, you might be right half the time. But what about the other half, the people that would have been interested? I think I told you this story about my wife worked at a furniture store in Seattle, and she was going to school. And it was a high-end store, Scandinavian-type furniture. And this little skinny kid comes walking in. You know, he wasn't dressed very well. Hair was going all over the place. Nobody wanted to help him because obviously he didn't have any money. And so they sent the rookie to help, and they found out later that that person who walked in was Bill Gates, who bought the biggest order the store's ever had. Another complaint here is that you're trying to sell the man instead of the woman. You don't know who has the money, who's the decision maker. So create your own note. You see what you want to see. The moment you think they're not interested or they're not listening to you or they're not going to do it, they're going to pick up on your body language. And you, even though they're interested now, they're going to start thinking, no, maybe I shouldn't. Maybe I should resist. That's what you're looking. You're assuming the worst. You're assuming they're not going to be interested. They're assuming they're not going to like you. You might get stuck in a self-negotiation phase where you're negotiating with yourself. So they're silent. You're like, okay, we'll give you 4%. Or they don't say anything. Okay, 3.5%. They don't say anything. 3%. They could have been happy with 4. So we have to be very careful about how this works in our imaginations. Because what you tend to think you're going to see, you're going to see. It's what we call a self-perception bias. That when we look at our imagination, that if someone sees a UFO, a lot of other people see UFOs. You put someone in a dark room and have them count a blinking light that doesn't exist, they start to see it. We see these things. A bear escapes from a zoo in Europe. Everyone's looking for it. Everyone's seeing it. But no, it never made it past the train track. It was killed by the train. So we have to look what this does to us. It hurts your energy. It hurts your nonverbal behavior. It messes with your expectations. You got to go into every situation feeling like they're going to do it. It's going to happen. It's going to be a great presentation. And I feel, too, that you have a moral and ethical obligation to persuade people. Because if you don't persuade somebody, if you don't have the right attitude to persuade somebody, someone else with an inferior product is going to charge more, you have to service and take advantage of this person because you were not able to persuade them. That's why we need to talk about the things that you do, because we see what we want to see. We hear what we want to hear. That's how the world works. The brain will play tricks on you. For example, football fans, we'll see. I don't know if you saw the Monday night game, big fiasco with the rent-a-refs, I guess we'll call them. You know, the Seahawks fan, in the very last play, they saw something, and the other team saw something completely different. You go, if you want an interesting experience, you go to a football game as a neutral party, and there's this big hit. One side will say nice hit, the other side will say cheap shot. We see what we want to see. If you tell somebody, look, you're going to recover in 1 week from the surgery when it's supposed to take two, they'll recover faster. You give people decaffeinated coffee and tell them it's regular coffee, their heart rate goes up. And that's how it is. Even when you give somebody a horoscope, it's interesting. Even if they don't believe in horoscopes, if it's negative, they won't believe it. But if it's positive, it's got to be true. So there's always this media bias that we tend to see, not only within ourselves and the media, when we look at things. And that's important how you look at this process. Another interesting study was done. They asked wives and husbands what percent of the housework they did. Right? Interesting question. The wives said 90%, and the husbands said 40% on average, which we added up, it's 130%. Now, the interesting thing is it was always over 130%. In their minds, though, that was their perception, that was their reality. Well, the wives think, well, that extra part's because they have to redo everything the husband did, but that's a whole other story when we talk about this bias that we see. We have to be very careful with this. Another thing, too, with this, when we talk about creating resistance, is understanding people's attention spans. Attention spans are all-time low. I mean, it's hard for people to concentrate. And if you start prejudging them, they're not going to be interested, they're not the type, you start lulling on, there's less energy, you lose their attention, of course you're not going to be interested. So you need to treat every person 100%, they're going to do what they're going to happen. Because everybody you meet, everybody you talk to, can do business with you, know someone that can. And that's important to understand. Plus, even if you know of 100% they're not going to do it, you keep going. Because it allows you to practice persuasion and influence skills, connecting skills. What did I do here? So when you really need it, you've used that tool before and it works. That's what we're looking for. Don't create your own resistance. The moment you do that, where you prejudge them, you don't think they're going to be interested, they're not the type, wow, it'll hurt you. I don't care if it's an email, a presentation, face-to-face, you give it your all. You're there. You might be spending the time. You might as well do it the right way. You might as well learn from it. You might as well keep their attention. Remember, we see what we want to see. And so if we want to see that they're not interested, we want to see what they think they're lying to us, we want to see it, we will. So be very careful. You go in with the expectation that they are going to do it, that they are going to make it happen. In fact, that's one of the laws, 12 laws of persuasion, as you know, is a law of expectations. They do influence reality. Here's one. A lot of people feel that they're in real estate or doing venture capital type things or funding a business. They have to talk to a lot of millionaires. And they're kind of, millionaires are going to be hard. They'll be tough to negotiate. The research actually shows millionaires, successful people, are easier to persuade than the average person. But if you go into that expectation, it's going to be tough, they're going to ask me hard questions, what am I going to do? No, they're easier. And this is a whole mindset thing. The people that are stuck in mediocrity, they're afraid someone's going to persuade them. They resist. Millionaires will actually say, persuade me. Show me the pros and cons. What are we doing here? Get to the point. Come on, talk me into it. And it's a much different scenario. But if your expectation is, it's going to be tough, it's not going to happen, that's where expectation comes in. Because we communicate through our body language, the way our voice inflects, our vocal variety, are all ways we communicate our expectations. And our posture, all those things. So we communicate our expectations through it can be either positive or negative. They definitely influence reality. I mean, you can take simple things like, This was done way back, but at Harvard, they gave students these rats. And one group, they said, you have the smart rats. The second group, they said, you have the dumb rats. So one group had smart rats, one group had dumb rats. And they went them through maze, the whole thing. Again, these same rats. Okay, the rats, they're all dumb, but they were the same batch. But the smart rat group was much faster. They went through somehow the expectations, the way they timed them, was much faster. One time in a newspaper, a coupon came out for tires for a car. And the coupon actually would when they used it, would cost them more than just going in there. There was a mistake on the coupon, but they had the same response rate because the expectation is a coupon. We see this with, for example, a contract. If I was handing somebody a contract, we'll call it agreement, with the pen, that expectation is going to increase the chance they're going to sign it. If somebody comes knocking at your door and wiping their feet wanting in, that's going to increase the chances you're going to let them in. We communicate this. And if you don't think they're interested, if they don't care, you've lost it. You lost it. You've prejudged. There's no energy. They see it in your body movements, in your eye contact, in your questions, all of those things. So don't create your own resistance. You go into every persuasive situation with the expectation you're going to be successful, you're going to know what to do, you remember what to say. Because remember, our brain is programmed to do what you tell it. When I teach people about, for example, names, that's one of the basics with connectivity, remembering names. When you use someone's names, it actually triggers a pleasure center in their brain. And then the main thing I'll get, well, I'm not good at names. Well, of course you're not. You just told yourself that. Name's not a function of memory. It's a function of listening. If you keep doing, I'm not good at names, with that expectation, you're going to forget it really fast. So we have to be careful on how we program ourselves that we're mentally ready to go into a situation. You take any successful athlete, you take an Olympian that's won a gold medal, they've visualized it. They've seen it, taste it, touch it, feel it. Even when I train public speakers to do presentations, they're going, oh, what if I forget? What if I'm not funny? What if it's dumb? What if I didn't? Well, ding, ding, that's what you're going to get. You got to go in there just like a professional athlete. You can see your victory. You can see it happen. You can see them laughing. Same thing's true in any persuasive situation. If you go in there half-hearted, they'll be half-hearted. If you go in there thinking they're not going to do it, they're going to sense they're not going to do it. And that is very important. Such a simple thing, but so hard for us to do as humans. That's why you don't want to create your own resistance. You talk to them, you're feeling it, you're going through every aspect of your presentation 100%. And because the moment you prejudge, wow, it really, really hurts your ability to persuade. Really hurts. Any questions on that? We're here on the law of expectations. Yeah, the law of expectations is in magnetic persuasion. It basically, expectations influence reality, what we expect to happen. You can use it in a negative way. If you went to a coworker and said, you look sick. They're like, no, I'm fine. What are you talking about? And then you have another person that's in on it. Are you sick? You look sick. And after three or four people, they're going to go home sick. It all goes back to pretty much the placebo effect. Sugar pills, placebos work 30 to 50% of the time. Wow, a sugar pill. Yeah, you can... A latest study I read was on irritable bowel syndrome. They gave people with IBS a pill. And they said, look, this is a placebo, but it's supposed to help, it'll help you out. And on the pill it said, placebo. And it was obvious, but it still worked. Even when they were told it was a placebo, it worked. That is the power of the mind. We pick up on things. We sense things. We don't, if you just fought with somebody and you put on your fake smile, the person's not thinking, oh, yep, they just fought with someone. They just feel awkward, uncomfortable, tension, unrest. You transmit those emotions to them. They sense those. That's why you need to be on track. And that's what I noticed with top persuaders. They can have a bad persuasive encounter, a bad phone call. Someone can say something really negative. Man, they can bounce back real fast. They're back in the game because they know that things are communicated through a voice, even over the phone. Like your telemarketing room, first thing you want to do, you want to increase in the telemarketing room, the first thing you do is you put a mirror in their cubicle and make them dress up. I guess that's the first two things you do. Like, they're over the phone. Why would it matter? Oh, it matters. The mirror, they're smiling more. They see their emotions. It comes through in their voice. It matters. It does matter. And dressing up, people do act differently. All right. Any other questions? Let me know if we have anyone on the phone. I got another one here about body language. This is, Kurt, how do I know when it's time to move on? That even though I'm giving 100%, I'm just giving 100% when they are interested versus they're rejecting me. Well, there's two ways. I mean, when you're over the phone, obviously, it's different than face-to-face. When you're face-to-face, you'll see them start to lean forward. Their head will start nodding up and down. Their voice will sound interested. It's important that you learn to read those things. You'll hear it in their voice over their phone. You'll hear their energy pick up. Versus when they're rejecting you, you're going to get the short answers. They're not opening up. If they're face-to-face, their eyes will be cold. Their arms will be folded. That's the thing. Now, the one I will add that you need to be careful of, I would rather have somebody angry at me or confrontational than someone that's indifferent. That's a dangerous thing to persuasion. So how do you know when someone's indifferent? It's the best way is they've tuned out. You look at their eyes, they're gone. They've checked out. They're just enduring their time. And they're waiting for you to shut up. They look older because their facial muscles will hang. There's nothing. They've checked out. There's no emotion in their face. You'll just get this glazed look. That is the time you need to say, okay, gauge it. Now, what do you do in a situation like that? I would ask a question, any type of question to bring them back, to gauge, see if you can bring them back. You can say something like, what does the perfect solution look like to you? Or if a genie appeared and made everything perfect, what would that look like? And if you're not getting any answers from that, you probably are done. Or you might want to do the takeaway. Well, it doesn't sound like this is a good fit for you. Maybe we should just kind of move on and part as friends. And if they say, yeah, you're right, you're saving some time. Or remember the law of scarcity. If you've taken it away, they might want it more. If they say, well, I don't know, I'm thinking about this. Another thing you can do is if it's a money issue or any issue, you do what's called the set-aside technique. So roadblock, and you say, okay, well, let's set that aside for now. If money's not an issue, is everything else perfect? Does everything work? So you just really point out that money is the only issue, and that's something that you can solve. Good questions. Any other questions? Let's see. We've got one here. Pull it up. Kurt, why are attention spans at an all-time low? And how long are they? Well, it's very difficult for people to go 20 minutes. I know college students that I've taught, door opens or taking a test, it's like squirrel, right? They're looking. they can't do it. I see in various studies, they'll say anywhere from probably 13 to 15 minutes is probably where you're really pushing it. Remember, we can think a lot faster than the person speaking. So first of all, we live in a society where it's kind of we always want to be occupied. Like there was an article today in CNN about we have these phones with us all the time. There's no downtime. There's no boredom. There's always something to do. There's no time to just be alone with your thoughts and think, which they're really concerned about. The experts are concerned about that. That's going to hammer creativity, which the United States has been famous for, a lot of creativity, creative products. And if we're not taking time to think and go through it, and they always need to be entertained. That's one of the reasons. It's the media. It's a lot of commercial breaks. It is our phones that we have. We've just kind of trained ourselves to do that. And that's even big in education, is there's no longer, they don't want education. They want edutainment, which is more entertaining with education. That's true whether it's a seminar or a corporate training or even on a university level. Good question. This is what I want you to do. I want you to think about this week. First of all, I want you to realize that it's probably an illusion of resistance, and do you create your own no? So I want you to manage your expectations. I want you to manage yourself that you're going into every situation, giving it 100%. You're ready to go. Mentally, you're on board. It doesn't matter if you see a few things that maybe show a little resistance, you keep going, you're going to assume the sell, as they say. You're going to assume they're going to do it. You're talking as they're going to do it. That's important. Any questions I've got? Kurt, is this similar to a presupposition? Presupposition is part of the law of expectations, which is well known in the world of NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming. So presupposition is basically, you talk like it's already a done deal. You're going to love how this car handles in the mountains. It's presupposing they already bought the car. So you, if you're doing real estate, so you have people, okay, where's the grand piano going to go? Where are you going to put the place at? Where's Johnny Jr. going to stay? That's presupposing they can see themselves doing it. Do you want to meet Friday or Saturday? Is presupposing there's going to be a meeting. So, yeah, it is a big part of expectations and doing this. The way you're talking, it's a done deal, so they can see themselves doing it. Good question. Any other questions out there?
Yes, Kurt, this is Angela Dodd, and the tape for last week, I tried to download it. I went to Y Persuasion, and it wouldn't let me do it.
Well, sometimes it senses attitude. Is that possible?
I don't know.
I'm teasing you. I'm kidding. No, there was something wrong with the link, and I had them fix it, so it is now fixed, and I'll leave that up. So if you guys want to take a look at it before we put up the next recording. So it does work now. There was something wrong with the link, though, but it is working now.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet. Any other questions out there? All right. All right. So if you have any questions, those listening to the replays, those overseas, send me an email there on whitepersuasion.com. Yeah.
Kurt, yes, I'm on the website now. It's going right to the old recording. It's not allowing you to download it.
Is it the recording or the video?
The recording.
Oh, I thought it was the video. Was the video the problem, or was it the?
The recording was the problem that I was trying to listen to.
Oh, I thought I because the webinar. Okay, that one works. Ah, so that was the disconnect. I was thinking it was the. All right, I'll have them fix it.
Thank you, sir.
I will have them fix it. All right. So everyone have a great week, and we'll see you same time next week.
All righty. Bye now.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Ciao.
Yep.